It started out as a month-long kayak adventure on one of the longest rivers in Asia, but a surprise heat wave and drought forced them to slow down and linger with the lotus. And that actually gave Dave Ellingson and his travel mates time to take in the spectacular landscapes and make friends with the river angels they'd meet along the way, as well as witnessing the remains of war and genocide, to see today's environmental challenges up close, and to get in touch with the centuries-old spirituality at the region's temples and sacred sites. Dave Ellingson is a retired Lutheran pastor and professor, a master gardener, and a competitive runner. His Paddle Pilgrim book series describes the lessons and encounters from his earlier paddling adventures on the Mississippi and the Hudson Rivers and in the fjords of Norway. In his latest volume, Dave describes his adventure down the Mekong River in Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam. Dave, welcome back.
Great to be here, Rick. Thanks for the invitation.
Wow, you know, I know you from, you're just a neighbor, and we've kayaked together, and we've been on the show several times talking about your adventures, and you are just such an inspiration, and I never know where your next adventure is going to come from, and this is across Southeast Asia. Tell us about how the trip came about, and it seems a little different from some of your other trips.
Well, I had paddled in the U.S. on the Mississippi River, the Headwaters, the Erie Canal, Hudson River, and then I went to Norway, which is my ancestral home, and paddled the fjords, but it was all in Western culture.
Yeah.
I wanted to experience Asia. And as I thought of this journey, this Mekong River flows through seven countries. And so the cultural, spiritual, political history of this area is just amazing.
It's a different world than what you'd have in the United States with the Mississippi, or you went to the fjords of Norway, and that was sort of your heritage and so on. And this is quite an adventure. Now, you do compare the Mekong with the mighty, you call it the Muddy Mississippi and the Mighty Mekong. Each of them is about 2,000 miles long.
Mississippi, a little more than that, 2,500.
They each serve a lot of territory, a bunch of states or a bunch of countries. Both are dealing with climate change and seasonal impacts for a kayaker. But talk a little bit, because we all know the Mississippi. Relate that to the Mekong.
Well, the Mekong, like the Mississippi, is the lifeblood of Southeast Asia. It affects every country, and its fate impacts the lives of people, whether they're fishing in the river, whether they're just traveling on the river. It's their highway. It's their business. It's their source of income, and it's really a part of their very nature. The river is their place and their waterway, their symbol of life.
You did the trip when? March 2023.
Yes.
And tell us about the actual itinerary. Where did you start? Where did you finish? How long was the trip?
Well, given the length of time we had, which was a little over a month, we realized we could only paddle a certain distance. And so we chose the Paksi is the city in Laos.
Uh-huh.
And we flew to Ho Chi Minh City, went to Paksi, began paddling there, and paddled over a little bit of Laos, a good bit of Cambodia, and really all of the Mekong Delta.
Hmm. And then it dumps into the sea, just like the Mississippi does.
Yes, it dumps into the North China Sea, which is a bone of contention for all Vietnamese because it runs all the way along their super long country that goes way, way up to China.
Uh-huh.
And they feel it's the South China Sea or the Vietnam Sea. So there are arguments going on right now between those two countries. And
it's a complicated political world.
Oh, the geopolitics are at the heart of many of the issues today.
But when you're in a kayak, I mean, I've been in a kayak with you. You're little, you have to reach up to pick the blackberries.
Yeah,
you're just way down close to the water. What is the view from the kayak of the cultures that you saw?
Well, that's what I love about kayaking. You're close to the water, you're close to the people. So many of the boats are just little boats piloted by local citizens, and they're out fishing or they're doing their daily travel. And so you paddle right by them or often stop and just greet them and say hello. And then we could paddle into shore where there's a village. We could paddle to a sandbar and put up our tents. We could stop in a village and actually pay the local citizens $5 and have a place to sleep on the floor and to get two meals.
My goodness. And there's a picture in your book of one of these floating markets.
Yes.
And all the boats there, laden with vegetables and fruits and people's wares, the boats are about the size of your kayak. So you're sort of, you just slither in there.
Well, you do, but you do have to be careful because it's like the Mississippi in the regard that there's large barges, particularly hauling rice, and they don't stop for my little kayak. We have to look ahead and try to avoid them. And we had several close scrapes where they were just doing their business, and I would yell to the team, "Shoreline, shoreline, quick!" And then they'd come roaring by, and we'd sit in their wake.
So you talk about your team. How many
Yes.
of you were there and each had a kayak of their own?
Correct. I actually had a corporate sponsor. Advanced Elements Kayaks gave us 4 kayaks.
Uh-huh.
And my team included a retired defense attorney who travels all over the world in his third act. I had a high school classmate who's a professor, a biology professor in Florida.
Yeah.
And then the third person was very interesting. It was a fellow who was a product of the Vietnam War.
Huh.
He was adopted by an American family and went to a college in the Midwest and then felt a call to ministry, and he's a Lutheran pastor now.
So you're a retired Lutheran pastor, and so is he.
That's correct.
This is Tom, right?
Yes, that's right.
But he had that connection with Vietnam.
He did, yeah. And he figured there were many thousands of mixed-race kids
yeah.
as a result of the war, and he thought his dad was probably a soldier.
Uh-huh.
Well, as it turned out, through DNA, he found out that his dad was a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist writing for the L.A. Times and had come from Yale. I was at Yale at the same time as him, Hillary, and Bill Clinton, a whole bunch of us back in the day, and he was sent to Vietnam on his first job.
Huh.
And he wrote about it, and he told the truth about the war, and he was kicked out.
Kicked out?
Of Vietnam.
And he left what would be?
Well, he didn't know he had a son until about 2-3 years ago, and Tom found him and has reached out to him, and they've become father and son across the country. Now, here's a funny thing Tom likes to say. He says, "I found out, first of all, he was Jewish." And he said, and the family tradition and probably my mother, my biological mother, is probably Buddhist. So I'm probably the only Buddhist, Christian, Jewish pastor in the country.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that gives him another angle.
Indeed.
This is Travel with Rick Steves, and we're talking with Dave Ellingson. And we're talking about, the newest edition of his Paddle Pilgrim series. This book features his kayaking adventures on the Mekong River through Laos, through Cambodia, through Vietnam. And he's with us today to tell us what he learned on his latest voyage through one of the world's most biodiverse areas. Dave's website, if you want to learn more about his work or pick up his book, paddle-pilgrim.com. Dave, I got to mention, you are almost a decade older than me. I love talking to you because you remind me I've got a lot of travel ahead of me. But we've been doing these kind of reports on your kayaking adventures for a decade now. How's the body doing? You're 75.
Well, I've had a lot of parts replaced,
yeah.
You know, and I'm put Girks into my knees so that they can lube my knees to make sure they work well. Both knees have been replaced. My wrist has been basically fixed. I've had almost every kind of surgery imaginable.
And you're squatting in this kayak, working, paddling hard for all day. It's 100 degrees out there in the water, and you do this for a month at a time.
Yes.
What's your trick?
Well, I have wonderful genetics. My family are a long-lived people. Secondly—
Well, tell us, what's in your medicine cabinet?
Well, that is important, too. I'll tell you.
You wrote about a cocktail there, Tylenol.
Yes, indeed. Well, I'll add one other thing. My doctoral work was in holistic health.
Okay.
So exercise, nutrition, stress management.
Yeah.
This was 50 years ago
yeah.
I wrote it. They said a bunch of hippie mumbo-jumbo.
Right.
Now doctors—
People accept it.
Accept it because it's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Dave, when you're doing something like this, what did you use for information? Is there a guidebook to help somebody kayaking down the Mekong River?
There are. Lonely Planet,
mm-hmm.
which I found very, very helpful, is a fairly formal guide, you know.
Right.
I read a book by Brian Ehler called The Last Days of the Mighty Mekong.
Ooh.
And he is the Southeast Asian resource person for the Stimson Institute, a think tank in Washington, D.C. He knew more about particularly the geopolitics, the environmental issues, and he connected me with a bunch of people in Vietnam who are our river angels.
But as a good traveler, you understood the importance of doing a little groundwork ahead of time, getting that information.
Absolutely.
Now, reading your book, it seems like I just thought the mechanics of doing this trip must have been so much fun. You were coming into Don Kong Island, and from the chapter, it just felt like, oh, you found a luxury resort, and it was $25 a night, and you thought, well, this is a splurge. Let's tie up our kayaks and treat ourselves well, splash out, you know?
Yeah.
Did you just stumble onto places? Because you can't really predict exactly where you're going to be, and when it comes time to call it good, you just tie up your kayak and look for a bed.
Plan A often doesn't work. And you never know what's around the next bend.
You can't make reservations for a trip like this, I wouldn't
No,
think.
And we saw this hotel, and we pulled in, tied up our kayaks, walked up a steep, steep slope, and here was a wonderful river angel who became our guide for 4 days.
So river angel is your term for these people that just, like, come out of the blue and help you out.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And they're everywhere. I mean, they were on the Mississippi. They were in Norway.
It's a reoccurring character in all of your books. But here, you're tying up in somewhere in the middle of, who knows, Cambodia or Vietnam, and you've got these fancy, you know, high-tech kayaks, and you just tie them up, and you walk up the hill, and you check into a hotel, and the next morning, your kayak's where you left it.
Yeah.
You didn't worry.
No. The kids were very curious. They wanted to see them, and the kids would come running down to the shore to wave to us, and quite often we'd stop and let them sit in our kayaks.
Oh, yeah.
And then oftentimes the people who would come down to see what their kids were up to would help us out with something.
But this is amazing. So many people would be so uptight, and they'd have all of their fancy security things, and all you did was make friends with the kids and go up and check into a hotel.
Well, and we were wondering, one of my questions, since it's 50 years since the Vietnam War, which affected my life enormously and many families, I wondered, well, what are these people thinking, whether it's in Laos or Cambodia? They were all, every single one, friendly, gracious, hospitable, welcoming.
In your book, you write like you're almost like the Pied Pipers, attracting all these children. The cool thing about your book is you're taking notes as you're paddling.
Yes.
And you wrote, prejudice and hate must be learned behaviors.
That's right.
Because these kids did not learn to be prejudiced and hateful.
No, they're curious. They're little scientists, as Jean Piaget, the French developmental theologian. They're trying stuff all the time. And if you're kind, my basic philosophy out of my faith, but I think it's true anthropologically, if we're kind to people, they will be kind.
You know, I've been thinking about that a lot lately, Dave, because I've got these travel as a political act talks that I give and so on. And I really say the takeaway is you come home with this appreciation when you have a good trip and you connect with people, real people, that the world, sure, it has its problems, but the world is basically filled with good people, with love, with joy, with families.
Absolutely.
And we just got to get to know them.
Absolutely. And as you say, travel is the best teacher. I say that the outdoor world is a classroom or a cathedral.
Yeah.
Because it leads not only to learning, but it leads to, I think, a kind of spiritual depth to realize that we're surrounded. In Vietnam, it's Hinduism, it's Buddhism, it's wonderful ancient wisdom. And I tried in both my book and the film I produced about this to honor those teachings. So if there was a temple nearby, we went in and prayed with the people. We lit a candle and we tried to absorb this spirituality, which really affects the lives of people there.
You know, that's what I really like about your books is your sort of witness. Your faith is one that honestly respects all these other religions, and just it's a festival.
Yeah.
Everybody
just
trying to figure out God, you know?
That's right. Yeah.
Dave Ellingson's known as the Paddle Pilgrim for the number of long-distance kayaking adventures he's accomplished and the books he's written about them and the life lesson they revealed. He's with us today on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us about the month he and his travel buddies spent attempting to kayak down the Mekong River in Southeast Asia during a surprise March heat wave and drought. His book about it is the fifth in his Paddle Pilgrim series. Dave's earlier adventures were kayaking the Mississippi River from its Minnesota headwaters all the way to Louisiana, on the Erie Canal and the Hudson River from Buffalo to Manhattan, and kayaking in the fjords of Norway, where his ancestors lived. Dave, when we're talking about traveling by kayak down the Mekong River, I just couldn't help but think about all the wonderful food you had.
Oh,
and you wrote about it as street food and just eating with abandon.
Yes.
Did you have concerns about your health as you were eating, or were you just totally diving into it?
Well, we spent a few dollars on inoculations.
Right.
Because there are lots of tropical diseases. And so we did all the precautionary stuff. We checked with the University of Washington Travel Service. We got our shots and all of that. Now, I happen to be a vegetarian.
Uh-huh.
So that's a little tricky. You'd think, oh, that's no problem in Vietnam. Well, everything in Vietnam, for example, has fish in it.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's a fish sauce or something. And so I learned how to communicate with the waiters. I'd draw pictures, you know. And the final solution, we in the U.S. have come to like pho, which is basically a vegetable soup with some form of meat in it. And so now I learned as we traveled that they can make it with partridge eggs.
Oh, yeah.
It. So on the top of my pho are these 6 or 8 little eggs this floating. And I take my chopsticks and I pick up one of those.
Very nice.
And I was taken care of. I often would say we had an Anthony Bourdain day.
Oh, yeah.
Because there is such variety in Bourdain, who I always loved his spirit as well. He basically said the best food in the world is street food.
Oh, yeah.
And particularly in Vietnam.
So
when President Obama came and regularized relationships, they met in a cafe.
Yeah. You know, I was stuck in an airport. I think I was in Singapore or something like that. And I just had a delay. I was going to be sitting there for hours. And I thought, I don't want to eat airport food. And I remember I walked across the street and through the jungle, basically, to a village.
Yeah.
And then I got back into that street food, you know? And that was so much more enjoyable than sitting in the airport. And having
very
that.
Inexpensive.
I mean,
when we were in Phnom Penh in Cambodia, we would wander the streets in the evening and we would pick a place based on smell.
And then
there would be 2 tables and grandma and daughter and child, and they had a little paper menu with pictures, and we pointed to the pictures, and then we'd ask how much it was, and it was usually $2.
Dave Ellingson is sharing his kayaking adventures in Southeast Asia with us today. He writes about his month along the Mekong River in the latest in his Paddle Pilgrim book series. Dave's also the author of children's books and, Say What? A Fresh Look at Old Sayings. Dave tells us about viewing the infamous killing fields in Cambodia and what former American soldiers from the Vietnam War are doing in the region today. That's in just a minute. And in just a bit, the co-author of Gastro Obscura describes some of the most unusual food traditions from around the world that she's dug up. Plus, listeners share a few of their haiku souvenirs from their travels. Happy Easter from Travel with Rick Steves.